turned their attentions to the western Dune Sea instead. Let them hassle the Jawas for a change. He started to talk pricing, knowing that if Kenobi's place were close to the Joondalund, he could ask for a sizable fee. But Ben interrupted with something that surprised him. "How much," Ben asked tentatively, "would it cost to extend your protection out even farther?" He affixed his eyes to the drink in his hands. "Say to where that kidnapping you told me about happened."
"What, the Lars place?"
"Well, around there," Ben said. Orin noticed Annalene pause nearby. Since they'd started talking, Annalene had circled back and forth, dealing with matters in the store, and yet, Orin noted, she kept swooping back comet-like to the bar, catching an earful where she could.
"The Lars place. That's way out there, isn't it, Annie?"
"Past Motesta Oasis," she said, turning back to her shelving.
"Past Jawa Heights, even,"
Orin said, calculating.
"What kind of business do you have that need protecting way out there?"
"Just curious," Ben said casually. "You were describing the potential a minute ago. I was just wondering what was feasible."
Orin nodded. "Well, let's see," he said, pulling a data pad from his vest pocket. Ben waited as Orin pretended to run the numbers. It was impossible, really. Orin knew there wasn't any prospect of extending patrols to Owen Lars' farm. It was more than 100 kilometers from the oasis, with a chunk of the eastern highlands in the way. The settlers' call would have to install satellite armories farther east before they could even consider it. And they wouldn't, because the fund was, at its roots, a local collective. But Kenobi didn't need to know that.
"I would think 1,900 credits a year would cover it," Orin said. The figure was huge. More than anyone was paying currently, except for Ulbrecht, if he ever bit. "And we'd need that up front to get weapons caches and patrols set up." He looked Ben in the eye.
"I don't know if you can find that."
Ben suppressed a laugh.
"I don't know that I can either."
"Thought so." Borin nodded and started to put away the data pad. Then Ben said something in a softer voice. "But I don't know that I can't." Orin raised an eyebrow. He'd known Kenobi had money enough to buy supplies, but why would anyone of means live and dress as he did?
"What kind of work are you?"
He was interrupted by a high whine from outside, syncopated with a thum 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 that grew louder every second and rattled cans from the shelves. Annalene looked up.
"What the?"
Jabe peered out the window behind the counter.
"You're not gonna believe this, Mom!"
The screech passed from east to west, heading toward the parking lot. Annalene hurried to the side door, Orin alongside her. It took Orin a second to realize what he was looking at. It was a land speeder, but some idiot had modified it to make it look like a snub fighter, with wings mounted on either side and a long, pointed nose grafted onto the front. The vehicle was painted a shocking red with orange mock flames on the air intakes, and it was currently making violent revolutions in the sand, its fake wingtip cannons nearly clipping several of the vehicles parked nearby. The thum, thum, thum resolved into a musical beat. Orin saw now that the central turbine for the ridiculous-looking land speeder was in fact a giant speaker, blasting sounds that nearly lifted pebbles from the ground. Behind Orin and Annalene, Callie yelled to be heard.
"The animals are going crazy! Did the call siren break?"
"I don't know what it is," Annalene said, gawking. The canopy of the strange vehicle slid forward to reveal the driver, a spindly thing with a leathery face and a head shaped like a teardrop. His cranium tapered off into a gray curl that pointed to the sky. He wore a black trench coat,
in Tatooine heat. And as he stood up in the driver's compartment, Orin spied not one, but three blaster-bearing shoulder holsters peeking out from underneath. Picking up a jeweled cane, the alien stepped out of the strange speeder. Half the occupants of the store were at the windows now, watching the driver. Two knees divided each of his legs into thirds, and golden anklets shook back and forth as he kicked the sand with his hooves. Any jangling the rings did was purely theoretical, as the speaker continued to boom away. "That's a gossan," Ben said at the window. "That's an idiot," Annalene replied from the doorway. "What's he brought with him?" They soon saw. Crammed into the back seat of the vehicle were two enormous green masses, figures that now struggled with each other. If the driver was a mystery to many of the claim's patrons, all could recognize Gamorreans, the great porcine warriors who worked for any lowlife that would feed them. The two fought, each trying to squeeze through the small space to exit the vehicle. When one finally won out and clambered out on the right, the entire speeder thing nearly flipped over. The gossam driver berated the Gamorreans, cracking at them with his gem-tipped cane. "What the blazes is he supposed to be?" Annalene said. Orin froze. Sudden realization washed over him. No. No, they wouldn't send anyone here. Would they? It took him just a second to answer his own question. Orin stepped backward into the store, nearly stumbling over his own feet. The good day had taken a turn.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible.